Welcome back. I hope, however, you spent that time, that there was a quality of nurturance and care, sticking with our theme. And again, welcome back. As I said, we'll just move right into this sit. So I want to invite each of you to come into a posture that allows your body to feel upright and alert. And this is more the energetics of uprightness and alertness. So the body, the physical body, may be lying down, or standing, or sitting. But a way of allowing the physical body to be comfortable enough, and then orienting energetically to allow ourselves to be available to ourselves, how it is to be in this moment and in the next moment. And the qualities of alertness, both is sort of a bow of respect to the teachings and to our own Buddha wisdom. Yeah. For the anchor of our sit, I'm going to have us work first to anchor in the body, much as we did in that brief arriving sit, to let the sit bones be known, what they're resting upon, where the feet are. To take a moment or two just to rest in the bones, to feel into the skeletal form of this fathom-long body, which is said to hold all the teachings. May the body be a place of refuge. And again, for many of us, that we might not be there yet. I understand that completely. But seeing if there's possible, if there's some place in the body where it's possible to rest, that's at ease. That may be true, that may not be true. Just an invitation. But to the degree that it's possible to rest in the bones, this earth element, connecting with the earth element beneath us. And then allowing the bulk of the attention, let's say 70%, 20, 30% stays in the body, connecting to the earth, to the structure that supports us. And then allowing the rest of the attention to rest on the mind, the energies of the mind. So the oft-given image of the mind is like the vast blue sky, or the expanse of the ocean. Each different manifestations or representations of this vast expansiveness. Yeah. So the natural state of the mind is like that. That's not always our experience of the mind, right? You get so crowded with thoughts and different voices and arguments, critics. Criticism. So this invitation, while resting in the body and then just opening up to, okay, there's this vast blue sky mind, and then the thoughts move like clouds. And sometimes they're storm clouds, and sometimes they're beautiful puffy clouds or little horsetail clouds. This invitation to have an awareness of the larger sense of the expansive mind, that the thoughts that come in and blow and swirl and pull us in and spit us out, it's not the totality of the mind's experience. Yeah. Much like if we go to the ocean image, there's a wave. There's a choppiness. We know that's not the totality of the ocean, right? It's just conditions coming together. And often our mind is like that. Conditions come together, so the critical mind has got the microphone, or a wounded young part has the microphone. So for the anchor, just being able to keep some attention in the body, and then just watching what's the quality of the clouds, the quality of the thoughts that pass through the sky, those that perseverate, the thoughts that want to figure something out, complain, judge, berate ourselves. If the water image is, resonates more, then what's the what are the qualities of the waves? Yeah, it's choppy surface or still. And again, can we meet ourselves with this real gentle curiosity? Oh, in this moment, the mind, the thinking mind, is like this. Might feel like a big mess. It might be unpleasant. Okay. Again, flexing that muscle of this is not a problem. It may be pleasant. It may be unpleasant. It may be neutral. Okay. And just resting there. Please remember, there's no such thing as a bad sit. Sometimes we come and it's sweet and easy. We drop right in. And sometimes we come and it's the whole big cacophonous, challenging time. Okay. That's interesting. Let's just be gentle and curious. And really just allowing ourselves again to be curious about these thought patterns, these habits of the mind, the repetitions, the commentary, the judging, the criticism, all that. Okay, huh. That's interesting. And there's that blue sky beneath all that, or behind all that, much as there's a vastness of the ocean that holds the movement of the waves. Nice to sit together. Today, I want to play around with, as you might have picked up, this thread of working with our thoughts, but particularly the difficult ones. And in some ways, I'm not making that much of a distinction here, which may not be correct, between the difficult emotions and difficult thoughts. In my own experience, they tend to go together. And the thinking mind can drive the emotions. It's in My Stroke of Insight. Woman's name, I can't pull up the author, wrote about the, an emotion really has a shelf life of about, I think 30 or 60, maybe 90 seconds. It comes in and we have the experience. And then the mind can just keep it going and going and going. So I'm blending them, which is not precise. But I think in our lived experience, that can often be how it feels. The conversation between the thinking mind and the felt experience of emotions in the body, they do tend to ride in the same car, so to speak. Thank you, Gilbert Taylor. So that emphasis earlier on an awareness of the big sky mind, or the vastness of the ocean, as a way of, okay, that's our natural state. The way of the mind is the clear blue, is the big white light. I'm getting that quote wrong. But there's a natural expansiveness to the mind that is our birthright. This is part of the teachings. And then it gets all clouded. And it can get clouded by the hindrances. The five hindrances, as many of you know, of grasping, wanting, craving, aversion, pushing away, not wanting. So those are two sides of one coin. The restlessness, anxiety, both restlessness in the mind, or the mind's racing, or the body is jiggling. As a kid, my leg was always bouncing. There's a restlessness felt mind, body. And it's sibling of sloth and torpor, that nature, when the mind gets super dull, or the body is really fatigued in a way that is distinct from being tired, but just a kind of slowness, a lethargicness in the body or in the mind. And the fifth hindrance, which is said to be the last to go, is that of doubt. And as in the story of the Buddha's enlightenment, before he enlightened, was enlightened, and became the awakened one, Mara visited for the last time, saying, "Who do you think you are?" Right, the last vestiges of doubt kind of came in and put his hand on the earth, with the earth of my witness. I can wake up. And he did. So that's the territory, in a way, of the five hindrances, that cloud, that big sky mind, or the waves in the ocean, if we use that analogy, whichever, again, one may resonate more than another. And the I'm going to focus today more on the aversion. Because in some way, I'm sure all through time, there's been many things for us to be averse about, but these are challenging times. And this particular month, or since the start of the year, seems like it's been challenging for so many people, whether it's crazy weather or health issues or just things being more challenging than we want them to be. And then how does the mind react? And using that word very intentionally, of the reactive mind can really spin us up and out. And then the body kind of comes along and feeling anxious or can't settle, or really the nervous system moves into a place of dysregulation. And when the nervous system is dysregulated, it's a very, very hard to settle the mind, right? As we've moved into the limbic part of the brain. So whatever was in charge in the prefrontal cortex is gone when we're in the dysregulated place of fight or flight or collapse. So being able to tend to the nervous system, breathing, so helpful. Just being aware, like, where in the scheme of things is my nervous system, to tend there first. Because so often we can think about, let's turn up the volume. Does that help? Can you adjust the volume here too? Can you hear me now? Is it better? Okay. And I will speak up. Thank you. that we can somehow argue ourselves out of an argument with the mind. Again, if there's a critical voice coming in or saying we should be another way or should be doing something, that we want to argue with it. And that rarely works, because all that tends to do is kind of feed that critical voice or the voice that's telling us somehow we're not enough, we're not doing it right, it should somehow be otherwise. And I know I've had the experience, and I'm hoping some of you can relate to this experience, where we're just trying to win a tennis game that is unwinnable. So then what? Okay, so can we come back into the body again? That way, like, is how regulated does my system feel? So through breath, through the awareness of being in the bones, the different movement practices, listening to music. Carlita and I were speaking of this earlier. Sometimes it's important to be aware of the skillful distractions when the mind argument is just too much. You say, okay, I'm going to step out of this. Okay, where can I go? And sometimes when there's enough reserve, you can sit on the cushion or do a walking meditation and to kind of practice with it of, okay, this is interesting. I'm staying curious. The sort of the conversation in the mind, the different mind streams, or that line about that within each of us is an inner committee. If the committee members are arguing, or it feels like a courtroom in some form or another. And we can sit with that and hold space and be expansive. And sometimes it's like, oh my God, no, I can't. Okay. And that awareness of, you know what, no. So we need the auxiliary skills, right? What can we reach out to outside of our mind to get some rest, to have some nurturance to the system, to refill the reservoir, all these different phrases. Most importantly, perhaps at first, is how to tend to the nervous system. Yeah. To just noting, okay, the system's pretty dysregulated, jacked. Okay, how can I come back? Breathing, movement, feeling the feet, tending there first. When there's enough reserve or enough strength to then look at, okay, is this working with the hindrances, the aversion? I don't like this. I don't like that. I want something else. Okay. Sitting with that, naming the hindrance, the antidote to aversion is working with loving kindness. We worked with a couple of weeks ago that extending kindness, loving kindness to ourselves. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May it be healthy. May I be at ease. Gives the mind something else to do instead of plugging into that track of the critical voice or the committee members arguing amongst themselves. Okay, here, mind, do this. Sometimes that's great. Sometimes it's not enough. Yeah, particularly for me in the middle of the night, when I wake up with that, with those voices, I don't want to sit with it. It's like, can I do something else? So I'll listen to a talk or I'll listen to a book, just as a way of building in support. And I think particularly when we've been practicing for a while, there can be this expectation of, I should be able to do this. I should be able to tame the mind, to steady the mind. Yes, but not necessarily through the mind, right? And how can we work with this, continuing to build our skill set, the toolkit, whatever, a basket of supplies that can help us. And sort of that, again, reaching back into the body, settling back down into the body is probably a better phrasing, of noticing that agitation that can come when there's so much spinning, or we spin out and the mind takes us somewhere that's really unpleasant. Okay, come back to the body, as I've been saying. Do we move to music? You know, or meeting with a friend, or going for a walk, playing with an animal that might be around. What are our go-to places that can take us outside of thinking, I should be able to work this out in my own mind? We are wired to be interconnected. There's a book that the title is escaping me. Something, I think in the title, I wish I could remember. But it's something about the skillful ways of offloading the mind. We weren't meant to just be isolated in our own head and being able to work everything out. That time in nature, taking breaks, exercise, conversations with other people. These are built into how the mind is wired. And so in the book, point to, like, schools do not teach this. And that's really kind of at our peril. because it's counter to how the mind is wired. This interdependence that's built in, the mirror neurons and on about the neurology of our needing to be in conversation, to be connected to nature, and the idea of just sitting with, whether it's a problem of work or in school or with our own mind, that we can sit with it. Some of us can, yes. And I would argue this might be somewhat heretical to say here in this class, but we also need support that is outside the mind. Yeah, because it's just, again, that Andy Lamont line that I love of the mind is a terrible place. I try not to go there alone. And some of us know what that's like. It's like, get me anywhere other than inside my mind. Okay. So how do we do that in a skillful way without beating ourselves up or feeling like, oh my God, I should be able to practice my way through it? We can practice our way through it in ways that are other than just sitting with it. Yeah. It's sort of the cause of diminishing returns. Is my sitting and holding space for it? Is there movement? Is there enough expansive and spaciousness so I don't go down the rabbit hole? Or when I'm down the rabbit hole or spun out, whichever may be more accurate. I mean, what else is available that can still be considered practice? Yeah, so part of this is being really measured in our expectations about how much we can handle. And it sometimes it's enough to say, I need something else. So that skillful move out of, if it's fear or aversion or a lot of anger, again, that being able through our own practice, developing a point where we can say, okay, I'm no longer able in a skillful way to sit with this. What else do I have at my disposal that still can be considered practice? Again, the walking practice, the movement practice. I would offer again, music, as I've been saying, or these other forms of being able to redirect the mind and stay within our integrity as practitioner, but mindfully choosing something that's supportive. It's from John O'Donohue, the inevitability or the truth, one of the first noble truth, that there is suffering in this realm. We're born in the human realm. Any which way we go, there's suffering, right? That dukkha is variously translated as stress or disappointment, right? Suffering. So John O'Donohue's pray for suffering. May you be blessed in the holy names of those who, without you knowing it, help to carry and lighten your pain. May you know serenity when you are called to enter the house of suffering. May a window of light always surprise you. May you be granted the wisdom to avoid false resistance. When suffering knocks on the door of your life, may you glimpse its eventual gifts. May you be able to receive the fruits of suffering. May memory bless and protect you with a hard-earned light of past travail to remind you that you have survived before. And though the darkness is now deep, you will soon see approaching light. May the grace of time heal your wounds. And may you know that though the storm might rage, not a hair of your head will be harmed. And this prayer, this blessing is also so supported by the science. Rick Hansen talks about this of when we're in a remembering past travails and being able to reflect of, oh, I've made it through some hard times before. Okay, this is hard now and I have made it through before and I will make it through again. So an antidote to fear is courage, and I will synonymously use faith. And one of my favorite Pali words of sadha, having faith in our capacity to meet what comes. And the skills that we develop by sitting and walking and understanding, and this is how the mind goes, these are patterns and habits of the mind. When we're not in a crisis or we're not in a dysregulated state, that practice allows us to be familiar with, oh, this is this thing that my mind does. And when we're caught in it, it's really hard to say, mind, you're a big liar. But when we can, when we're in a regulated place, we can start to see, oh, there's that habit of the mind. That's not true. And I've referenced this before. I think it's Ajahn Pasano, who's one of our lineage holders at Spirit Rock. One of his talks is the mind is a liar, and being able to call that out and being able to really embody, know in an embodied felt sense that the mind can be shameless. Right? The different thoughts, the different voices, the different committee members, whatever image is more effective, don't always have our back. And we know this, right? The harshness that can come in, or the how we can berate ourselves or think our lives should be otherwise. Helpful? Not so much. I've shared this poem before, but I do love it. Jane Kenyon's Otherwise. I got out of bed on two strong legs. It might have been otherwise. I ate cereal, sweet milk, ripe, flawless peach. It might have been otherwise. I took the dog uphill to the birchwood. All morning I did the work I love. At noon I lay down with my mate. It might have been otherwise. We ate dinner together at a table with silver candlesticks. It might have been otherwise. I slept in a bed in a room with paintings on the walls and planned another day, just like this day. But one day, I know it will be otherwise. And I love that poem. And I feel like this also then invites into this conversation the thread of equanimity. Oh, it's like this. It will not be like this, right? So impermanence comes in here too. These are fundamental teachings. It's like this now. It will change. Even though sometimes it's like, no, no, it's going to stay like this forever. It feels that way. It can certainly feel that way. And when we allow our attention to become really subtle, sometimes, often, we can start to see there's changes. And sometimes it's just glacial. And we wish it were otherwise, right? So that's the grasping. That's that hindrance of wishing it were otherwise. So the equanimity that can come in behind us to support us or underneath us to say, okay, right now, it's like this. And I often say, and that's certainly in those, in the arriving sits of pleasant, unpleasant, many of you know this, but those of you don't, that's the second foundation of mindfulness is, are the Vedanas, the feeling tones. Every experience, every kind of contact our attention makes with a sight, a sound, a touch, a thought, smell, there is an unconscious, often unconscious sense of it's a pleasant thing. I would like more of it. It's an unpleasant thing. I would like less of it. Or we don't even register it, so it's neutral. So these Vedanas, I find to be so helpful as a way of interrupting the thought pattern. So the mind that's spinning out, being able to sit with, oh, this is really unpleasant. Because in so naming, we've kind of taken a step back from the swirl. We've stepped out of it, and now we're able to observe it and name, oh, unpleasant. Is another one of my favorite poems. It's The Way It Is by William Stafford. There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about the thread. But it's hard for others to see. While you hold it, you cannot get lost. Tragedies happen. People get hurt or die. And you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. Don't ever let go of the thread. Each of us will have a different thread. Yeah, for some of us, it might be equanimity for compassion. But this invitation of William Stafford is that there are certain, I would argue more than one thread, perhaps, certain currents that run through our lives that are supportive. The Buddhist teaching would say there are actually three, the Buddha Dharma Sangha, that these are threads that we can hold dear that also serve as places of refuge to support us moving through all the suffering that is inevitable because of blame or that we've done something wrong. It's just we happen to be born a human in this realm and we're going to suffer. All right, I'm going to pause there and then I'll shift into a guided. So first, just to pause, there's a lot of words. And just connect into your own body, feel your feet. And then I'm going to ask each of us with caution and to a degree that feels manageable, call to mind if there's a habit pattern of the mind that when we get caught, we can spin out because we're scared or we're angry. And I'm hoping this question makes sense. But if, whether it's through identifying a thought pattern or just an awareness of when we can get caught and sort of spun out by the unskillful thoughts or the shameless thoughts, or that sense of when the mind is kind of lying about how we should be doing something better or different, or we're not good enough, or we've messed this up. I'm hoping, well, I'm thinking some of us will be familiar with those types of thoughts. And to be able, again, not going for the biggest ones, not going for the biggest thought bully, but just one with a little bit of charge that's familiar enough that should we follow it a certain distance, that's when we can kind of lose ourselves and start spinning out around that thought or drop into kind of a black hole. Not encouraging us to go there, but just kind of getting a glimmer of that feeling. Oh yeah, this is what it, when my mind starts spinning, okay, what happens in the body? Sometimes we're going to lose connection from it because the thinking mind can just be so big and so believable, so convincing. And so I invite us, while some attention stays with the mind that's spinning, and then drop the attention into the body, feel the feet, the sit bones. Inhale, and then a long exhale. Inhale again, and a longer exhale. Feel the feet. Feel the support of whatever is beneath the sit bones. Allow the attention to rest in the lower half of the body. So I would posit one thread here. Stay with the image of the poem, never let go of the thread, is our own body. The ability to feel the elements in the body. And then honoring that thread, I want to ask each of us, again, to reference that poem. That there's a thread that you follow. Again, each one of us will be following a different thread. It goes among things that change. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen. People get hurt or die. You suffer and get old. Nothing you can do can stop time's unfolding. Don't ever let go of the thread. What is that thread? It might be the thread of compassion, of honesty, of truth, generosity, joy. Might be the thread, the conviction of love. Something of faith. Faith, again, in the terms of Sadha, is what do we rest the heart upon? What matters deeply to you? Where can you rest your heart? I would, again, posit that is one of the threads that supports us. That's one of the skillful means in our basket of support. What is that thread? that is unique to you, that can serve as a refuge. And it might not be clear. But notice what comes up if you let the question linger. What is the thread, this guiding principle, a guiding belief, a quality that I can rely upon as something that is true? That can be a refuge, a solace. And an expression of our own generosity and beauty, of how we want to move in the world. Don't ever let go of the thread. So, thank you. I'm going to stop there. I appreciate your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.